Julie Christie will be reading five poems of her own selection, which cover a whole range of Neruda's work, as both Jerry Martin and Edwin have been telling me. The first poem comes from Neruda's best-known anthology of love poetry, 20 Love Poems and a Poem of Despair. This he wrote in the mid-1920s.
Okay. Tonight I can write. Tonight I can write the saddest lines. Write, for example, the night is shattered and the blue stars shiver in the distance. The night wind revolves in the sky and sings. Tonight I can write the saddest lines. I loved her, and sometimes she loved me too. Through nights like this one, I held her in my arms. I kissed her again and again under the endless sky. She loved me. Sometimes I loved her too. How could one not have loved her great still eyes? Tonight I can write the saddest lines. To think that I do not have her, to feel that I have lost her, to hear the immense night still more immense without her, and the verse falls to the soul like dew to the pasture. What does it matter that my love could not keep her? The night is shattered and she is not with me. This is all. In the distance, someone is singing. In the distance. My soul is not satisfied that it has lost her. My sight searches for her, as though to go to her. My heart looks for her, and she is not with me. The same night, whitening the same trees, we of that time are no longer the same. I no longer love her, that's certain. But how I loved her. My voice tried to find the wind to touch her hearing. Another's, she will be another's, like my kisses before. Her voice, her bright body, her infinite eyes. I no longer love her, that's certain. But maybe I love her. Love is so short, forgetting so long. Because through nights like this one, I held her in my arms. My soul is not satisfied that it has lost her. Though this be the last pain that she makes me suffer, and these the last verses that I write for her.
For the second poem, we move forward a decade a bit more to the time of the Spanish Civil War, a poem that Neruda wrote in 1937 from his collection Español en el Corazón, and this is, I'm explaining a few things.
I explain a few things. You will ask, and where are the lilacs, and the metaphysical blanket of poppies, and the rain that often struck your words, filling them with holes and birds? I am going to tell you all that is happening to me. I lived in a quarter of Madrid, with bells, with clocks, with trees. From there one could see the lean face of Spain like an ocean of leather. My house was called the House of Flowers because it was bursting everywhere with geraniums. It was a fine house with dogs and children. Raúl, do you remember? Do you remember Rafael? Federico, do you remember under the ground? Do you remember my house with balconies where June light smothered flowers in your mouth? Brother, brother. Everything was great shouting, salty goods, heaps of throbbing bread, markets of my Arguella's quarter with its statue like a pale inkwell among the haddock. The olive oil reached the ladles. A deep throbbing of feet and hands filled the streets. Meters, liters, sharp essence of life, fish piled up. Pattern of roofs with cold sun on which the vein grows weary. Frenzied fine ivory of the potatoes. Tomatoes stretching to the sea. And one morning, all was aflame. And one morning, the fires came out of the earth, devouring people. And from then on, fire, gunpowder from then on, and from then on, blood. Bandits with airplanes and with moors. Bandits with rings and duchesses. Bandits with black-robed friars blessing came through the air to kill children. And through the streets, the blood of the children ran simply like children's blood. Jackals that the jackal would spurn. Stones that the dry thistle would bite, spitting. Vipers that vipers would abhor. Facing you, I have seen the blood of Spain rise up to drown you in a single wave of pride and knives. Treacherous generals, look at my dead house. Look at broken Spain. But from each dead house comes burning metal. Instead of flowers. But from each hollow of Spain, Spain comes forth. But from each dead child comes a gun with eyes. But from each crime are born bullets that will one day seek out in you where the heart lies. You will ask, why does your poetry not speak to us of sleep, of the leaves, of the great volcanoes of your native land? Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets.
For the next poem, we're moving slightly out of chronological sequence. It's a poem taken from an anthology of Neruda's published in the early 60s called Plenos Poderes, Fully Empowered. And the poem is Births.
Births. We shall never remember our dying. We had so much patience when it came to living, recording the numbers, the days, the years, the months, the hair and the lips we kissed. Yet we shall leave the minute of our dying unrecorded. That memory we leave to others, or else just to the water. To water, air, and time. Nor have we any recollection of our birth, though being born was noteworthy and new. And yet you now retain no part of it, no hoarded shaft of that first light. It is known that we are born. Likewise, that in room or forest or fisherman's hovel, or in the crackling of the canebrakes when a woman's hour is come, there is a strange moment, solemn as wood, a hush unlike all others. It is known that we were born. But at that great upheaval between not being and existing, to have hands, to see, to have eyes, to eat and weep and pour oneself away, to love and love and grieve and grieve. Of that transition or shiver which one more body accepts like an electric charge as though into a living vessel, or of that woman who no longer harbors life, but lies beside her blood, torn by fulfillment, with her beginning and her end, and that disorder still disarraying the pulse, the floor, the bed, till all be gathered up, and life's thread counts another knot. Of such things, nothing. Nothing you can retain of that fierce, rearing wave which tumbled a dark apple off the tree. You hold no memory save that of life.
The next poem is taken from the Canto General, the general songs that Neruda published in 1950. Both Jerry Martin and Edwin spoke to you about this enormous poem which stretches over numbers of sections, which moves from Genesis, which moves from early encounters with Machu Picchu, right up to the present moment. And the part of the Canto General that Judy has chosen to read is the letter to Miguel Otero Silva, which Neruda writes when he is in exile, moving from house to house in the late 1940s. And he's writing to his friend in Venezuela, and he's writing to his friends in Cuba. Are you happy to move on to it now? Or?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So the poem here, from, I think, section 13 or so of the Canto General, the letter to Miguel Otero Silva.
Nicholas Guillén brought me your letter, written invisibly on his clothes, in his eyes. How happy you are, Miguel, both of us are. In a world that ulcers have almost hidden, there is no one left aimlessly happy but us. I see the crow go by. There's nothing he can do. You watch the scorpion and polish your guitar. Writing poetry, we live among the wild beasts, and when we touch a man, the stiff of someone in whom we believed, and he goes to pieces like a rotten pie, you in the Venezuela you inherited gather together whatever can be salvaged, while I cup my hands around the live coal of life. What happiness, Miguel. Are you going to ask where I am? I'll tell you, giving only details useful to the state, that on this coast, scattered with wild rocks, the sea and the fields come together. The waves and the pines, petrels and eagles, meadows and foam. Have you ever spent a whole day close to seabirds, watching how they fly? They seem to be carrying the letters of the world to their destination. The pelicans go by like sailing ships. Other birds go by like arrows, carrying messages from dead kings, viceroys, buried with strands of turquoise on the Andean coasts. And seagulls, so magnificently white, they are constantly forgetting what their messages are. How clear life is, Miguel, like the sky, when we put loving and fighting in it. Words that are bread and wine. Words they have not been able to degrade, even now. Because we walk out in the street with poems and guns. They don't know what to do with us, Miguel. What can they do but kill us? Even that wouldn't be a good bargain. Nothing to do but rent a room across the street and tail us, so they can learn to laugh and cry like us. When I was writing my love poems, which sprouted out from me on all sides, and I was dying from desperation, nomadic, abandoned, gnawing on the alphabet, they said to me, "What a great man you are, Theocritus." I am not Theocritus. I took life and faced her and kissed her and won her, and then went through the tunnels of the mines to see how other men lived. And when I came out, my hands stained with garbage and sadness, I held my hands up and showed them to the generals and said, "I am not a part of this crime." They started to cough, showed disgust, left off saying hello, gave up calling me Theocritus, and ended by insulting me and assigning the entire police force to arrest me because I didn't continue to be preoccupied exclusively with metaphysical subjects. But I have brought joy over to my side. From then on, I started getting up to read the letters the seabirds carry from so far away, phrase by phrase, slowly and confidently. I am punctilious as an engineer in this strange duty. I go to the window all at once. It is a square of pure light. There is a clear horizon of grasses and crags, and I go on working here among the things I love. Waves, rocks, wasps, with an oceanic and drunken happiness. But no one cares if we are happy or not, and they cast you in a genial role. Now, do not exaggerate. Don't worry. And they want to lock me in a cricket cage where there would be tears, and I would drown, and they themselves could give speeches on my grave. I remember one day in the sandy acres of the nitrate flats, there were 500 men on strike. It was a scorching afternoon of Tarapaca, and after the faces had absorbed all the sand and the bloodless dry sun of the desert, I saw coming into me, like a cup that I hate, my old depression. At this critical point in the desolation of the salt flats, in that weak moment of the fight when we could have been beaten, a little pale girl who had come from the mines spoke a poem of yours in a brave voice that had glass in it and steel, an old poem of yours that moves among the wrinkled eyes of all the workers of my country, of America. And this small piece of your poetry blazed suddenly like a purple blossom in my mouth and went down to my blood, filling it with a luxuriant joy born from your poem. I thought of you and also of your bitter Venezuela. Years ago, I saw a student who had marks on his ankles from chains ordered on him by a general, and he told me of the chain gangs that work on the roads and the jails where people disappear forever, because that is what our America has been. Long stretches with destructive rivers and constellations of butterflies. In some places, the emeralds are heavy as apples. But along the whole length of the night and rivers, there are always bleeding ankles, at one time near the oil wells, now near the nitrate in Pisagua, where a rotten leader has put the best men of my country under the earth to die so he can sell their bones. That is why you write poetry, so the disgraced and wounded America can someday let its butterflies tremble and collect its emeralds without the terrifying beating blood of beatings coagulated on the hands of the executioners and the businessmen. I guessed how full of joy you would be by the Orinoco writing. Probably, or perhaps buying wine for your house, taking your part in the fight and the exultation with broad shoulders like the poets of our age, with light clothes and walking shoes. Ever since that time, I wanted to write to you. And when Guylaine arrived, running over with stories of you which were coming loose everywhere out of his clothes, they poured out under the chestnuts of my house. I said to myself, now. And even then I didn't start at a letter to you. But today has been too much for me. Not only one seabird, but thousands have gone past my window. And I have picked up the letters no one reads that they take along to all the shores of the world until they lose them. Then in each of those letters I read words of yours. And they resemble the words I write and dream of and put in poems. And so I decided to send this letter to you, which I end here, so I can watch through the window the world that is ours.
And the final reading is taken from a collection of, from 1958 of Neruda.
This is where we live. I am one of those who live in the middle of the sea and close to the twilight, a little beyond those stones. When I came and saw what was happening, I decided on the spot. The day had spread itself and everything was light, and the sea was beating like a salty lion, many-handed. All that deserted space was singing, and I, lost and awed, looking towards the silence, opened my mouth and said, Mother of the foam, expansive solitude, here I will begin my own rejoicing, my particular poetry. From then on, I was never let down by a single wave. I always found the flavor of the sky in the water, in the earth, and the wood and the sea burned together. Through the lonely winters, I am grateful to the earth for having waited for me when sky and sea came together like two lips touching. For that's no small thing, no, to have lived through one solitude, to arrive at another, to feel oneself many things and recover wholeness. I love all the things there are, and of all fires, love is the only inexhaustible one. And that's why I go from life to life, from guitar to guitar, and I have no fear of light or of shade. And almost being earth myself, I spoon away at infinity. So no one can ever fail to find my doorless, numberless house there between dark stones, facing the flash of the violent salt. There we live, my woman and I. There we take root. Grant us help then. Help us to be more of the earth each day. Help us to be more the sacred foam. More the swish of the wave. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Well, on all your behalf, I'd like to thank Julie, Edwin, and Jerry for such wonderful.